Livewire with Phil Richards.
Hi, this is Phil Richards. Welcome to Livewire. Today I'm chatting with musician, singer and songwriter Will Ludford, who's got a new single out, All I Wanted Is You. Hi, Will. Welcome to Livewire.
Hi, Phil. How are you? And thanks for having me on the show.
Great. So we're going to be playing your track in a moment, All I Wanted Was You. Just tell us about that, first of all, and then we'll have a chat about everything else you've done in the past.
Yeah, well, the track itself, the album, All I Wanted Is You, I started recording pre-lockdown. So I had the studio booked and everything, and a band, you know, brass sections, the whole thing. And we went. And the first song we did was All I Wanted Is You, which was the title song of the album and was going to be the single. So the first day we got landed at the studio, tea and coffee, chats about what happened and where everybody's been, put on with the music, worked till about, I think we stopped at about 8 o'clock, if I remember right, that evening. And we had an awful lot of the song done. Didn't need very much done to it. Off we went. And then the next morning I got a call from the studio saying we're closed. And I said, what do you mean you're closed? He said, we've been closed down because of lockdown, we're not allowed to open. And I thought, right. And after that, it was like one at a time in the studio, and it was hard work, you know. Like, I mean, I've done albums and singles before with other people where it's been a breeze, you know, and enjoyable. There's one person at a time, then you had to go out and let somebody else come in and do something. But we decided what we'd do was finish, just get the single finished, get it out and promote the single, and then work on the album bit by bit until we had the album finished.
Right, now this single has got a lovely sort of jolly holiday, almost Caribbean feel about it, in a sense, isn't it?
It has, yeah. And a lot of people have said that, you know. But unfortunately, I think it's like a lot of writers. People have said to me, how did you get the idea? What was the idea behind that? And I put my hands up. I mean, I despair at these people who say, oh, well, it came to me in a blinding light, and I had a moment of realization. But I put my hands up all the time. Songwriting, Phil, I don't know how I do it. But like, and honestly, if I knew how I wrote songs, I'd be doing it every day.
Who worked on it with you then? Who's appearing on it?
We had the production in, and then we had production team. We had a couple of brass sections. We had a brilliant keyboard player. Keyboard player probably added an awful lot to the song, more than any of us. And the engineer, I think his patience was heroic, if that's the right word, because he put up with everything that we were doing.
All right, now let's go back to yourself and your career, because you've mainly been in music all your life, but I know you've done a few other things as well. But you started out at school, didn't you, with school friends in Leighton Buzzard, and you had a band there. Do you want to take it up from there?
Yeah, we started off in a school band. Like with every school band, people come and go. I mean, there's no one. We were at school together all our life, and then that was it. You know, we're famous now, but we've been in the same band for 40 years. There may be bands like that. I don't know, but I'm certainly not one of them. At school, we had people come and go. We had a couple of bands. We had one band, the first little band we had, it was called City People. Now, make sure you get that right. It's City People, as in you know, city. And we played, you know, all the usual stuff that people played, and you know, we weren't any good at all, that's for sure. But, we did all of that. As we got better, another school friend of mine, Barry Parsons, we formed a band called Diamond Lil, and we had Nigel Howlett on drums, and we were kind of like a lot better then. I have to say, like, I'm not my own thing here, but we had improved an awful lot as musicians, and that band was kind of like, I suppose, the beginning of me thinking to myself, I like doing this, you know. So we did that, and we did the college circuit with Diamond Lil, that kind of thing. We went around, and eventually it broke up. Then I moved to London to join a band, and I stayed in London then, doing working with other bands, then doing session work at Chalk Farm, and different bits and pieces like that. I went to Ireland and I wrote a couple of hits. Again, I'm only explaining the situation. I'm not pushing myself on anybody, but I wrote a couple of number one country songs for the Irish artists, and then worked in studios in Ireland, and then, you know, the album going. So I've worked with quite a few people. It's been a journey for me, but it's been a great journey. I mean, people I've met have been very good. I stayed with it and meet some nice people, and has, you know, no regrets.
And you also sort of got to be voted the world's best guitarist at one point, didn't you, in 2014? That was by XLR Radio in Europe, wasn't it? What a fantastic thing to have happened to you.
Well, that, yeah, XLR Radio Europe. I wrote the number one chart record for Abacus, a London band, Abacus, and that was a glam rock song called Indian Dancer. So I knew a few people in Europe at that time. Well, I toured Europe, so you knew a few people. And then this XLR Radio, they were doing a poll for best guitar player of 2014. They wrote to me, emailed me, and said that we've got your track here, and can we include the track in the poll? And then after, I think, about maybe a month, a fellow called Hans got in touch with me, and he said that, congratulations, you're number one, you've been voted number one as best guitar player in the world.
What did you think of that then?
Yeah, and I thought to myself, that's amazing. How did that happen? So we talked about it at great length, and then when I realised what happened, I could then explain it to other people, because Jimi Hendrix, who was an idol, I met Jimmy twice, and I thought, you know, God, you know, like, even to if you're 10 feet away from Jimi Hendrix, you feel inspired, you know. And, he was second, and I think Eric Clapton was third, who's also a legend and another idol, yeah. You know, and you think, how, you know, you say, so how can this be? You know, well, I didn't pay anybody for this. What's happened? You know, so I talked to Hans about it, and I said, don't mind me asking. I said, I never met these people. How did they think that I was, like, they'd never seen me playing? And I wasn't like Jimi Hendrix has gone before then, God bless him, you know. It's not like you can stand on stage next to each other and somebody can say, yeah, number three is better than number one, you know, that kind of thing. So Hans kindly took time to explain to me. What they did was people voted on the solo that fitted the song. And you had some songs where, and I'm sure you're aware of some of them, in, you're a professional person yourself, so you have some songs that go da di da di da 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 di da da. Then you have this. There are lots of songs like that where the guitar, you've got a verse and a chorus, and all of a sudden there's a guitar. You think, well, what's all that about? And then it goes back to the song. And so what they did was they voted on the guitar solo that fitted the best with the song itself, the track. And that's how the people voted.
Well, well done anyway. And just to do a bit of name dropping, though, because you have actually worked a little bit in conjunction with George Harrison and the Detroit Emeralds and Liquid Gold and the Barren Knights, all very, very big names.
It was very lucky in Leighton Buzzard, because the Barren Knights are in Leighton Buzzard. And I got to know them and then started writing songs with them. When I say lucky, I mean, it's not often you get someone who's living in a town with a famous band who's already had number one records. You know, some people have to move from Liverpool or Nottingham or you know, Scotland to go to London to even be in the scene. But up the road from me, lo and behold, was a chart-topping band who you could talk to. So I worked with them for a while. I can honestly say, with hands hand on my heart, working with the Barren Knights changed me not only as a person but as a musician. I grew working with the Barren Knights. I grew as a musician. I learned so much.
And tell us about working with Tiny Tim.
Well, when I went to London first, I did the Tiny Tim thing. He was a lovely man. And the only thing I say about Tiny Tim is he was an underrated singer. I mean, people saw this guy, this tall guy with long hair, playing a ukulele. But his operatic voice was unbelievable. Like, I mean, you had people coming from operas to see this guy, you know. It wasn't, the image he gave wasn't him at all. Well, he was a nice guy.
His big hit was Tiptoe Through the Tulips, wasn't it?
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Remember it well, yeah. And there was the Detroit Emeralds.
So the Detroit Emeralds thing came along, and we were playing at the California Ballroom, and they were playing, they'd landed. We were at the California Ballroom.
Yeah.
So we did our set, la-di-la-di-la-di-la, bum-bum-bum, and they were on after us. Before that, they had said to us, they'd landed from America, they had no equipment. So, okay, I said, can we use yours? Okay. I mean, like, I'm not really sure how you get on with it. I mean, but they used, they had a small PA, but we had a PA. They used everything we had, basically. And then the end of that night, they said to us, you fancy coming down to London? We're in a place called Gulliver's, which was in central London that time. I don't even know if it's going now, but it was a place where big bands went to play afterwards. Then all the stars, wherever they were playing, they could come in and watch them. So we went down there, and it was great when we played down there because we met George Foreman, the boxer, you know, a huge man. Rod Stewart was there. A few people, other people were there, and they were, you know, again, very professional, nice people, talked to and everything great. We wanted for nothing in their company. They were good. And then the George Harrison thing, that was, I met George twice, and how can I explain that? Now, this is going to sound strange. But George was the nicest man I met in music. He really was very, very nice. He was so humble. He was going over an album. It was called the album. He was in. It's an Indian album, and he was making an. It's called Wonderwall. Wonderwall was the album. So he said to me, and it goes like this. So he played a tape in the room. There's about 15 people in the room at the time, including Paul McCartney. And I thought, I don't know how I'm going to get out of here. I thought myself, because this guy is playing indie music, I can hardly speak English. You know, it's going to be difficult for me. So I told him that. I said, I'll be honest with you. I said, I don't really understand any of that at all. I might as well tell you. So we laughed. So we chatted about different things. And in the middle of the conversation, as I said, there's about 15 people in this room. He said to me, do you want a cup of tea? And I said, oh, I'd love one. He just went up. He went up and he put the kettle on himself. And he came back and he said, you take sugar and milk? And I said, please. And he came back with two cups of tea. And I thought, there's a lot of people, 15 people saying that all he really had to do is say, we have two teas here, you know, and everybody would have jumped. But he was so humble. He got up, the kettle on, and came back with two cups of tea, like you would in mixed calf. You know, he sat down and then carried on chatting. And then I met him the second time then. The first time he said to me, you know, that's okay. We worry about the album. He said, pop down again sometime and have a chat and tell me what you're working at. Because he was interested in what I was doing. We got on well. I did pop down. Back. We were in a place called Savile Row. They had their Apple headquarters there in Savile Row. And we chatted again and met and went to the studio with him where they were doing Wonderwall. And I think that was the beginning of his spiritual journey.
Right, let's play your track then to finish with, Will. Just tell us about that.
This is the All I Wanted Is You track. I've got a gold disc and I've got, I'm looking at the wall. I've got a gold disc and I've got a platinum disc for the All I Wanted Is You. That's for radio downloads. And that gave me a gold disc and a platinum disc.
Will, thank you very much for joining us on LiveWire today, and good luck with everything.
That's great. Well, I thank you very much for having me on the show, and thanks to everybody for listening, and a big thank you to everybody who supported me with my music from beginning to where I am here, and hopefully in the future.
Will Ludford there. If you want to get in touch, it's bigbuzzardrecords@gmail.com, and of course you can find Big Buzzard Records on Facebook. Thanks again, Will.
I never wanted a big car too. I
Livewire is produced by Steve Osborne Media. Steve Osborne Media.